Welcome back to the Pod of Greed.
Welcome back indeed, guys. So, a couple of things right off the top here. You might be noticing that I'm holding my microphone today.
Because Paul wants to look more professional.
Yeah, that's right. No, actually, the reason why I'm holding my microphone is because the cheap microphone stands that we use come from Amazon. Because we don't have a lot of money. And so, mine broke.
This is because of the tariffs, right?
Yeah, sure. And mine broke. And so I'm having to hold the microphone today. I'm going to do my best to just keep holding it and not like set it down because I know that'll mess things. Like, you'll probably hear it.
And, like rubbing on with your shirt and
that'd
stuff.
Be bad.
So he has to hold it perfectly straight the whole time.
Or die trying.
So I'm going to try and make him laugh a lot.
Yeah. Second thing I wanted to say was I've gotten a lot of comments that we've seen about ads on the podcast if you're a listener on like Spotify or Apple Music.
Can we control that?
Well, so here's the story with that. The platform that we use to publish the podcast does have a monetization feature that they've been advertising where you can like have mid-roll ads inserted in and it'll like, you know, give you, you can like make money off the podcast that way. And as you guys know, we don't have any sponsors. So I was like, okay, sure. I'll try it out. See if this is worthwhile. And apparently it's very excessive, the amount of ads they do. They do a bunch of like pre-roll ads, a bunch of post-roll ads, a bunch of mid-roll ads. So now that so many people have let me know that they are really excessive and they're ruining the listening experience, I'm going to go in and reduce them as much as I can so that that doesn't, you know, like intrude on you guys' listening.
That's right. We're going ad-free, baby.
Well, up until like, I guess very recently, we were just ad-free.
Oh, I guess that's true.
And that's also a reminder, if any company is listening and wants to like just actually give us an organic sponsorship.
Yeah, we can shill. Ask literally half of our audience.
Yeah, they'll say we shill on any given any given video. But yeah, I apologize for that. I will look into it and correct it. Please don't hate us. Okay, now, for the actual regular things. For anybody tuning in to the podcast,
put your ones up.
Yeah, ones in chat in the premieres. And if you're catching this later... or now or whenever, thumbs up the video because that helps us out too. Leave a comment, all the nice things. Happy Thursday. Okay.
Wednesday for us.
So this week has like basically no Yu-Gi-Oh news.
Which is so weird because I feel like we've been riding this wave of constant Yu-Gi-Oh controversy.
Yeah, it feels like it's been kind of just this back and forth of Konami like changing something, taking it back, changing it, taking it back. But all we've really gotten is more announcements for cards that are in the, you know, the upcoming tins.
Yeah, 10 announcements.
Some of which people seem to like, some of which people not as much like. I'll reiterate what I said from last week on that, though, is that, like, I do hate that they are printing a lot of cards kind of in the same rarity that they were originally released in. Like, for instance, I saw LZ.
Yeah, LZ is a secret rare. It's a secret. It's like, and okay.
I think that any time that they're reprinting, like, a high-rarity card from before, I feel like that's, like, a chance to kind of, like, de-rarity it a little bit. Like,
I mean, I don't mind it as much because I never actually got my full set of LZs, so...
Yeah, but still, like, it might be better to have it in, like, a low-rarity to get it easier. Or do you mean having a secret so it can, like, match?
Yeah, it'll match. I know it's not an exact secret, right?
It's using because, like, it's the prismatic secret.
So it's going to look a little uglier, but close enough.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool. Just more of those things. They did announce, I think, the next set is, like, Phantom Revengers or something. Or like,
wait, that was real?
Yeah.
Yo, I saw that. I swear to God, I thought it was a mock-up.
Yeah, it's the one that has the three, you know, another deck builder archetype set. They renamed the Hecaton Shear archetype into Heca Hands.
I got Heca Hands.
Yeah, I don't really know what they were going for with that. I think that the idea was, like, since their effects involve kind of, like, taking opponents' cards out of, like, their grave and their hand and, like, the top of their deck and stuff, it's like...
They're grabbing cards.
They're very grabby.
Very weird. Not a fan.
Yeah, I don't know if I like that translation. Like, I just feel like it's a little on the nose and doesn't sound natural, but...
Though, to be fair, their regular name, say it again?
Is Hecaton Shear?
Yeah, nah, I can't even say that, so...
Yeah, true. Like, eh. So, anywho, that's kind of it for Yu-Gi-Oh! On the Master Duel side of things, I know that they added Ryzeal to the game.
Oh, yeah.
It's been a nightmare to deal with.
Okay.
It's been annoying. I mean, you know, it's Ryzeal and Malice.
You said Malice was bad, so I figured Ryzeal coming in will balance it out.
They're both atrocious, really.
Oh, I know what this is. You're not playing either one.
Of course not. No,
you have to join the meta.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not doing that. Whenever stuff, whenever new stuff comes to Master Duel, I just like to play something a little different. Like, I've been mostly using Rescue Ace. That's kind of back in my rotation. I'm hoping that they'll maybe announce a new Rescue Ace support card since it's got a tactical tri deck. And, like, ideally, you know, that could power up the deck. It certainly needs it. But no, they're in Master Duel now. People are either happy because there's something to contest the Malice kind of wave. Mm-hmm. Other people are upset because it's like, well, it's another broken deck you got to deal with.
I mean, so. But that's always going to be the case in Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah. So that's in the Master Duel end of things. I saw they announced more like Challenger Cup prizes, but we don't have Challenger Cups in North America, so.
We don't get those. They have nice mats, though. They have nice mats.
Yeah, very cool mats and other prizes and stuff, so. I think that's like pretty much it, though, as Yu-Gi-Oh! Goes. Has anything like happened in the Yu-Gi-Oh! In your Yu-Gi-Oh! Sphere?
No. Honestly, it's been a quiet week of Yu-Gi-Oh! For me.
I was at Walmart earlier today and I picked up this. I got this Justice Hunters. I guess they call these like the little token boxes or whatever.
Shake it for the people.
Yeah, you can hear.
Oh, yeah, shake the box too.
I hate you. Yeah, so each box includes 4 7-card packs and 1 of 6 plastic Field Center cards. This is actually pretty cool because, you know, normally the Field Centers that you get like a sneak peek are paper Field Centers, so right. You're never going to really keep them. But I guess the plastic ones are higher quality, and there's a couple of yummy ones, some canine ones, and some Draco tails or whatever. Yeah.
So we're going to open it live right here.
I mean, I would, but I already have to hold this microphone, so.
No, you can handle it. I believe in you.
Okay, so real quick, we're going to insert this in the Yu-Gi-Oh! Part, but we just saw the
moment we finished the pod, this dropped.
Yeah, we just saw the reveal of the Yu-Gi-Oh! X Nike Air Max 95s.
If you don't remember, these are the shoes that, or they're styled off of Joey's shoes in the anime and manga, which were styled off of the Nike Air Maxes.
Yeah, so we just saw this from like Stash Sneakers. They have, I guess, some early images of these. And yeah, they say that this is the Yu-Gi-Oh! X Air Max 95. There seems to be only one colorway releasing, at least they were able to get pictures of. And these do exactly look like Joey's like shoes in the anime.
Yeah, these the Joey's. These the Air Joey's.
They say the release date is set for September 4th. Retail is 200 euros. And stock is going to be very limited. So
I wish the pictures were better quality.
Yeah, they don't look amazing. There's like a close-up, though.
I don't understand. So one of the pictures features like a red-eyes face, but I don't know where this picture is being taken.
Yeah, I don't really know. I don't even know.
I do. I can tell. This is inside the show.
Inside, yeah, inside okay, I see. Okay,
all right, I'm with it.
So what do you think? Just quick reaction.
Easy cop, if I can win the lottery.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to probably be pretty hard to get, but I would like to have a pair of these. Nike, if you're listening.
Nike, if you so happen.
Yeah, if one of you happens to listen to the Pod of Greed, it is the only podcast on the internet.
Then statistically, then we have a good shot.
Yeah, we have a pretty good shot. Send us a couple pairs, in fact. We wouldn't mind a few.
I kind of need one for the whole crew, so like.
Yeah, like maybe be willing to send like a few.
I need a 9.5, a 10, I need a 7, I need a 12, and a 14.
Yeah, that's right. So. What do you? I mean, you think they're pretty good, like design wise.
I mean, it's a solid color choice, right?
I guess you don't wear these even
a shade of blues with the bright. It feels very much like a 95 colorway.
It feels like something straight from that time period too. I like them. These are cool. We just wanted to quickly add this in since we
didn't have much like Yu-Gi-Oh! Stuff this episode, and one dropped into our laps right when we finished.
Yeah, you guys can let us know what you think about it too.
On to other card game things.
Yeah, other card games.
Actually, did we even put another card game story on here?
I feel like there wasn't much. We have a lot of stories for this week, but like I feel like there wasn't much in the card game.
I guess I'll just bring my own like personal card game anecdote.
Okay.
You know, the Gundam card game has been in full swing. And if you are at all interested in that game, you have seen plenty of hard takes and feelings about it. Mostly around the things that have nothing to do with the actual game itself, but around it. The prices of the cards, the
availability of
the
product,
availability of product,
kind of been up in the air.
Temperaments and style of playing and collecting this game, and I kind of just want to like kind of hone in on this whole chasing a metagame thing.
Okay, well, give me some background. What do you mean by this?
So on Reddit, not long ago, maybe it was yesterday or the day before, I saw a post about of a person who was complaining that these new Gundam players, they don't want to have fun with the game. All they want to do is find a metagame and optimize, and
eat,
they don't want to have
and
fun.
Lie.
Yeah, they want to eat hot chip and lie. That they don't want to have fun, kind of like home brewing and like testing and having a good time.
Yeah, so I guess they feel that it's too optimized out the gate.
And so the first thing I wanted to do was kind of cut their head off completely, where it's like, well, you know, we're all grown in the card game industry nowadays. We've all played other card games. We know what a mature card game looks like. So why pretend like the game won't have a metagame? Why pretend like we don't want to optimize to win as much as possible when we've done it all before already?
I mean, I think that, so my understanding of this is basically there are people getting into this Gundam card game and they kind of are lamenting the fact that they don't get to enjoy the game innocently and kind of like mess around with cards, experiment, have fun without kind of a game that is already optimized, the best decks are kind of already known or min-maxed or whatever, and they would like it to, like, you know, slow down, like, let's have some fun, guys. Like, that's my understanding of it.
Yeah. Now, they don't.
Where are you seeing this sentiment, by the way?
Reddit,
okay,
that's,
yeah,
actually the only social media I have nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing, I can't blame these people entirely, because I don't know where they're necessarily coming from. Like, I think that if you are coming from, if you've been in the card game space and you're getting into Gundam, then none of this should be a surprise to you. Like, new games get heavily discussed and heavily optimized, even leading up to release. Like, mm-hmm. when there's just, like, early beta products and stuff, people are already, like, kind of finding the best stuff. So I'm not, so I think that, like, yeah, like, if you're coming from that background, like, what can you really say? But I feel like maybe the people saying this are legitimately, like, Gundam's just their first card game, and they're kind of, or maybe their first card game in a long time, and so maybe that's why they feel more.
And if this is like your first card game, or maybe it's been 30 years since you last played a card game, then I can understand it only to an extent, and this is why I don't like the idea that we're saying people who optimize and play to win are not trying to have fun. Like, there's this weird thing where playing bad deck equals fun. Optimizing for good deck means not fun.
Right. But I see a lot of that in the Yu-Gi-Oh!
Winning
community.
For pretty much everybody is fun. Everybody likes to win. Some people take losses harder than others, so they try to win more.
Yeah.
Like, that's still fun to them. I hate where it sounds like people are the fun police, where it's like, no, you can only have fun if you play the game my way. We got to take 50 random cards, throw them into a deck, and just play randomly. It's like, sure, that can be a type of fun, but
right,
not everybody has to play that way.
So, yeah, it's a complicated one for me. I was thinking about, because I know we talked about this a little bit earlier this week, like off camera, but I was thinking I might make a video on it just because it is such an interesting phenomenon. Like, is that we are in what I've kind of coined late stage card games, mm-hmm. which is just to say that, like, any game you play, this applies heavily to Yu-Gi-Oh! It's my own experience, but I think any game, like, there's more resources, there's more communication in the games. Like, there's Discord servers, there's Twitter and Reddit and Facebook groups and guides on YouTube and, like, repositories of just tournament data and all of this stuff. And so I think what you end up with is basically, like, you can't avoid it. People are just going to know more about games because that's how it works now. Like, mm-hmm. we're not on the playground where, like, everybody kind of has heard a different thing and there's
a good old days.
A rumor about a Mew underneath a truck in Vermilion City and Pokemon. You know what I mean? Like, you just, now that would just be like data mine. No, that's not true. Or yes, it is true. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I don't love every aspect of it. And like, I do, I can empathize a bit with people who want to kind of like re-experience a more innocent wonder with mm-hmm. these games. But on the other hand though, like if you're on Reddit and you're telling people that like, that's the wrong way to enjoy the game, like how much better than them are you really? Like, cause you're still like on here telling people like, okay, you know, like you, I'm tired of all these people like optimizing the fun out of the game. Like they need to stop. It's like, well,
it kind of reminds me of when the toxic casual term was coined in the Yu-Gi-Oh space, when the arguments between like casual and competitive players got to such a fever point that we coined the term toxic casual, because in some ways casual players were just as bad as competitive ones, just they took it from a different angle.
Yeah, because like everybody knows about, you know, kind of the meta elitist sort of meta snob who's like telling you your deck is trash and they beat you and they're rude and they're dismissive. But you know, like there's a brand of casual player who can do the same thing. They can be really,
you're just a meta sheep. You only net deck. You don't have true creative like skill. You don't like to have fun.
You know, and they'll get online and like really tear people away with those points. And so like, it's like, you ever heard of like horseshoe theory?
No, that's a new one for me.
In politics, basically, the idea that like, you know, the further left and the further right you go, the closer they start to actually resemble each other. Mm. Like in terms of just, you know, without getting like too political about it, but just in terms of like the general behaviors and the way they view outsiders kind of tends to mirror each other. So like you might think like, oh, like I'm a leftist, but like if you become like too much of one, you'll start to kind of just shut out even like, you know, people in the middle or people, you know, in the moderate left or moderate right. And the same can be said of like, you know, so basically,
I get it. Their points are different, but their behaviors become more similar.
Pretty similar. Okay. And so it's like, I feel like card games can kind of have an aspect of that too. Again, I feel bad for these people. Like I wish we could go back to the playground too. Like I get it, but this is just the world we live in. So,
but this, these Reddit posts, they also kind of triggered this kind of need to, like, because I have this like gatekeeping personality, and Paul knows, and you guys may not know, but for years I wanted to gatekeep everything I cared about from everybody, including my own twin brother. I wanted, like, Gundam was one of those things where I didn't even allow people to be fans of around me. I was like, oh, you watch one Gundam show? So, like, tell me like what happened in episode 6 to this character, who died and like who got, yeah, I was very gatekeepy behind Gundam. And so I kind of get the read that there are Gundam fans in the Gundam TCG space that they don't want non-Gundam fans
playing outsiders. This card game
and collecting the cards.
Yeah.
And I get that at my core. I wish I could take every single Gundam card away from all of you, because that gatekeeping part of me is still in me. I just suppress it.
I guess to be more clear, you're just talking about, like, I guess, the people who just, they're playing this game because it is a new game, not necessarily because it is a Gundam game.
I mean, there's a lot of like just card gamers now. Like 20 years ago, you didn't have journeyman card gamers, but nowadays, especially because of the way Bandai releases game after game after game, we now have an archetype of person that's a card gamer. They just play any card game they're interested in.
They release.
And, you know, right now they're looking at the Gundam card game, and I don't think Gundam fans have too much of a leg to stand on when it comes to defending the card game away from these people, mostly because they came to this game to win it. And I think the best thing Gundam fans can do to defend the Gundam card game is to beat them first.
Yeah, I think that's always going to be a thing, like when a new game comes out, is, you know, like people playing it for different reasons. I think that Riftbound is actually another example of one that will probably be in this conversation soon when it comes out. Is like they're going to be, because ideally Riot, I'm sure, would love for existing League players, because there's a lot of them, to like all try out Riftbound. But that does mean that there will be people who like the champions of League of Legends. I wouldn't know. I don't know much about, you know, like there are people who maybe are into that lore and that's just like what they kind of want out of the card game. But then there are also people who will optimize the hell out of it. And like, they want to play and win and talk ratios and, you know, sequences and game states and stuff and theory craft. And they'll probably just have to butt heads. And that's just,
but it, I think that's just, that's modern card gaming now. And I think that's, honestly, I think it's perfectly fine. I think you need to have the purists who love the IP for the IP more so than the cards themselves. But, and you need the people who are going to grind the ever-living mess out of this game and, like, just squeeze out every bit of competitive spirit the game has built into it. And then make some more on top of it, because that's usually how that goes.
So I guess, like, TLDR, like with many things in life, a healthy mix of both.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, here is, I guess we just pivot to some other, like, game stuff that happened.
We got some gaming stuff.
I saw Evo was this past weekend.
Yes.
That was really cool. I'm not a huge fighting game enthusiast, but I did see, like, bits and pieces. I saw, like, you know, that Marvel Tokon.
I think it's Tokon. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, there was a playable demo for that at Evo, and so a lot of people were lining up for that. Mm-hmm. Also, that new game, I guess speaking of Riftbound, that new game 2XKO, I believe is what it's called.
Yeah, I thought that was a project title. I guess that's the actual title?
I think it is, yeah. Okay. And that's the one that's based off of League of Legends characters, I think.
I believe so.
That's another fighting game. Yeah, so I saw that, and I saw, like, funny GIFs and stuff. Anything stick out to you about Evo? I didn't actually get to watch it, but...
For me, sticking to announcements, like, Street Fighter showed off a Crimson Viper trailer, if you're not familiar with Crimson Viper. She was a new character for Street Fighter 4. A fairly, like, complicated, but, like, really hot character. I remember there were comparisons to, like, Angelina Jolie when the character came out. And so there's a lot of excitement for that character coming to 6. They showed off, you know, that they're doing their swimsuits costumes and, well.
Yeah, as well as, yeah, Street Fighter swimsuits. Type of gamer is
very excited for those.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that gamer probably already had mods, so.
That's true,
this might not even be all that new for them.
And, I sound like I'm separating myself, but I will also have most of those costumes, despite the fact that I don't play any of those characters.
Yeah, you're a gooner. I saw, like.
I resent that. I prefer the term goontelligent.
I've never, okay. Well, I saw more collabs. I saw, like, Lucy in Guilty Gear.
Yep, that was fun. Was cool. That was cool. I didn't know what I expected for Lucy being in Guilty Gear, but my God, does the CD Projekt Red, or what is the studio? Is that MAPPA?
Huh?
MAPPA that did Edgerunners?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what studio. It might have been MAPPA.
Their animation in the Guilty Gear Strive, like, style looked amazing.
Yeah, that looked really good. And she's like, you know, that's like with every genre of thing, really. The collabs are the name of the game here. Every character in every fighting game is crossing over into, like, every other fighting game.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because Fatal Fury City of the Wolves, you know, they showed off Ken in their game. Ken from Street Fighter. And you know, that might sound familiar since Terry has crossed over into quite a few fighting games at this point.
Yeah. Is there any, like, particular fighting game, I guess, that, like, you're, like, playing or looking to be playing soon? Because you and, like, Alex delve a little bit more into fighters than I do. The only fighting game I really play is, like, Smash.
Yeah, but you're way better at Smash than we are
anyway. Yeah, but you know more about the games still. Because, like, I mean, I know you've played, like, a lot of Street Fighter. I know you played a little Tekken.
So there's two games that are on my list in the short term. I want to get back into playing Street Fighter. Not just for the goon costumes, but Sagat just came out, and Elena came out before Sagat did, and I haven't even played Elena yet. And then Fatal Fury, City of the Wolves. It came out in a time where I had literally no money, so I missed it. But I still want to play Fatal Furies. That's one of my favorite game franchises of all time.
Okay, yeah. I saw one interesting thing about Tekken. Well, it was kind of more of a... It was like people were talking about how, like, the models in Tekken are...
Armor King is coming to Tekken.
Oh, it wasn't about Armor King, but it was about, like, the girl in the swimsuit or whatever who...
Which one?
Yeah, there's some new girl, and like I saw a clip on Twitter. People, I guess, actual Tekken fans will know what I'm talking about. They were comparing her to like, you know, Jin Kazama or whatever, and how like a lot of the male models in Tekken are just so detailed, and like they'll have like, you know, like so much muscle definition, and like even down to just like having hair on their legs and stuff. Whereas like a lot of the female models, or at least like hers, was like so airbrushed and just soft.
No, they're
and,
pretty like, smooth in Tekken.
Yeah, just so smooth. Like they don't even have like abs or anything or any muscle definition to the extent that it's just like they're trying to make them look like a, I don't know, like a pinup model. Like I don't know, something.
Tekken is still of that older fighting game design, and they really haven't shifted from it. Where it's like, okay, well, how do we design our characters? Well, everything has to be sexy. The men have to be sexy. The girls have to be sexy. But their opinion on what's sexy is seemingly quite limited. Because, I mean, all the male characters are just gigantic and ripped. And then the female characters are just smooth.
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
And curvy, but smooth.
So it's like all like ultimately for the male gaze type of the game. Yeah. Well, here's one actually interesting story about Tekken 8. Tekken 8's new character, Mary Zo, is that how you say it? Miari Zo?
There's an I in front of the A, but I have no idea how you pronounce that.
Yeah, I don't play Tekken. I'm sorry if I'm sounding, you know, too ignorant here. But is making headlines in Africa for helping keep a centuries-old martial art from Madagascar alive.
Madagascar has martial arts?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you might not have known. The devs traveled there to study Malagasy history, explore ancient ruins, and learn from locals to make sure that she honored their culture. And so you can actually see, if you pull up this like tweet or whatever, basically there's like a newspaper article that actually was in, I guess, a local paper.
It's Harada.
Yeah, and it's like this interview with Harada, and they're talking about Tekken 8. And so I thought that was just kind of a cool thing where basically, you know, they said that like game director Harada went as far as hiring a voice actor from Madagascar to voice the character in Malagasy. And I thought that was kind of cool. It just seemed like, I know fighting games have a bit of a history of like, usually the cast is very multicultural. Like you'll find like fighters, like this fighter is from Mexico, this fighter is from Chile, this one's from like New Zealand, this one's from Africa. And they oftentimes, I remember actually in, I think, an interview, Harada or someone said this about how like, you almost, when you're designing these characters, you want them to effectively wear their culture on their back almost.
Yeah.
Sometimes literally. Like their entire outfit will be
literally.
Their outfit will like be the color of their country's flag or something.
Right.
And so I thought this was just like a really neat example of that. So
I have to admit, I know absolutely nothing about Madagascar. Like probably a few different Americans, I'm sure. My experience at Madagascar is the movie franchise.
Yeah. I like to move it. I remember that from school. That was a fun one.
When I saw that they announced a fighter from Madagascar, my first thought was, they got people there? I know that paints me to be incredibly ignorant, but
if you've only seen the movie, maybe you might think that. So, yeah, I guess that's Evo. It sounds fun. Maybe one day I'll try to go to an Evo. Like, I don't...
Compete?
I mean, No. Coward. But it's a convention now, though.
That's true.
Like,
there's so much to do with Evo.
There's
now.
Art, artists, and demos, and panels, and things, and so like it's just almost more of like a community. I got just fighting game enthusiasts go there, so that might be nice to go to, and also to like watch the finals. I know that guy Mena.
Oh yeah.
He like won Street Fighter with like this clean sweep, like a 6-0 or something.
Continuing to dominate as he always does.
Yeah, it's all that. There's also that one guy who had like a breakdown after he lost.
That video has been making rounds, absolutely freaking out after taking a loss. Though I did read that his reaction was more of a joke. Like, he wasn't seriously losing his shit. Though it did look like,
Yeah, he looked like he was in distress about losing.
I think they were playing Fatal Fury now. Think about it.
Yes, that's Evo. Anything else we got that's cool?
I don't know how cool this one is. It's certainly something. Oh, but then it didn't load. Let me try again. There we go. GTA 6 is expected to cost $100 and become one of the most profitable games ever.
Oh my goodness.
Now that's not official, guys. That's actually based off of someone's speculation, but they put in the title anyway. So GTA 6 could become one of the most profitable video games of all time, with analysts predicting over $10 billion in lifetime revenue. And that's not too crazy, since we saw that GTA 5 lasted for so long.
Yeah, GTA 5 had a very long tail, especially since I guess like GTA Online is basically considered GTA 5.
So according to Pachter, this is Michael Pachter. He's a brokerage.
Oh my god, Michael Pachter! I remember, dude. Lore dump, real quick.
Okay,
I remember Michael Pachter. So I used to frequent this website called Game Trailers. This is like the site that basically not birthed, but like popularized like Jeff Keighley, and it had all these like video segments with different people, and Michael Pachter was one of them. He's like this industry analyst guy who worked for Wedbush Securities. And like he was kind of an older guy, and he would always have like just these very like interesting takes on the gaming industry. This brings me back because Game Trailers is like a long extinct gaming website.
Never heard of it.
So like it's a little deep history dump. It's neat to see that he's still in the, I guess like just that industry still, like the gaming industry and stuff.
Well, analysts. As Pachter's biggest fan has said, he works with the brokerage firm Wedbush Securities, and he says that GTA 6 has already cost more than $1.5 billion to develop, and he predicts the game will be immensely profitable. It'll likely generate $10 billion in lifetime and another $500 million annually from GTA Online.
Oh, wow.
Those are really insane numbers. He also expects the standard edition of GTA 6 to come with a pretty premium price tag. He says, I expect a $100 price point for the game. That would mark a major shift from a typical $70 AAA game price. But as we've heard from other games that were all starting to creep up, I thought we were going to land in the 80s. You know, I thought the 80s was where we're going. But I mean, GTA is... kind of.
It is pretty big. I know they mentioned later in this article, GTA's reveal trailer became the most viewed non-music debut on YouTube, smashing 100 million views in just a day, and its subsequent trailers have all released to millions of views and likes. Yeah, I mean, GTA 6 is like, it's that game, right?
But is it that $100 game?
I don't know. I think that for a lot of people, there's an understanding that GTA is a game that you will kind of be like playing for the rest of
your life
or whatever. But they have a point though. I mean, I know like people, it's crazy. I get on Facebook sometimes and like I'll see people
sorry.
I know. Me too. And I'll see people streaming like GTA 5 or like GTA Online or whatever it is. Like to this day, like people still just make these GTA 5 mods and like it's still so popular. It's interesting because like I guess since I don't have much of a personal history with GTA, I still have a hard time, I guess, wrapping my brain around the zeitgeist that is, you know, that it lives in.
Sandbox crime.
Yeah,
that's the way I can describe it.
But it is popular, and like, yeah, I mean, would you pay $100 for this?
So on this pod, I've been on record saying that I was interested in playing GTA 6. I think I went as far as to say I will play GTA 6. But I at no point considered that it could be priced higher than $70 at the time. I feel like 80, I could be convinced. 100 is such a leap for me. I haven't played GTA 5, so I don't have the... I don't have the same assurance that some people might have that this is going to be the best gaming experience of my life. So I don't know if I can actually part with a 3-digit number.
I know what you mean.
For a video game.
I think like also like in this economy, it's just going to be a tough sell. Like it's always like every time I think about the prices of games and the price of like anything now, like I was reading these headlines about how like Fantastic Four has not quite reached like, you know, box office expectations or something.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of reasons people cite for that. Some people say like, you know, it's the Marvel superhero fatigue or Marvel's dying or whatever. You know, their last few years of movies have not been great. And so people have a lot less faith in them. I think that that's all probably true to some extent or another. But honestly, when it really comes down to it, I think it's actually just the fucking economy. Like, I think that it is actually, it's a lot to ask people to just pay like $15 for a movie ticket. And then, like, if you're like a family, then basically what that means is movie night is $100. Because, like, you and maybe, like, it's like a husband, a wife, and two kids.
Shit, them kids could buy their own tickets. What you mean?
Yeah. And then also, like, you know, snacks and everything, and that's so overpriced. I think that, like, people are just finding, like, between real life expenses, like groceries and gas and, like, bills and stuff. And it's just, like, would you have the expendable revenue to spend $100 on a video game? I almost think that, like, if you were buying GTA 6 for $100... I think I could be convinced to do it. It's just like, I guess I would, I'm just never playing another video game.
Like, it would be hard to play anything else after dropping 100 on a game. So I have a question, Paul.
Okay.
What does a $100 video game look like to you? Like, what would a video game have to be for you to break off 100?
So basically there's two examples. And unfortunately GTA 6 is one of them. Is it's got to be a game that is effectively a sandbox of possibilities. Giant city, you can just go around and do anything. Like, there needs to be just constant, like, just things to do, things to explore, things to make up and, like, create and stuff. Like, there's got to be so much replayability to it. Like, so much. Mm-hmm. And then the alternative would be, like, a Super Smash Bros. Like, just...
You would pay $100 for Smash?
So I'm not saying that I would like be jumping for joy to do so, right? Like, I'm not going to be like bouncing my way up to GameStop to like pay my money, but more like I consider how much Super Smash Bros. Like Melee, for instance, I've played in my lifetime, and it's probably like tens of thousands of hours like of Melee that I've played over the years. I love the game to death. And so to me, to have paid only like, you know, I guess like $50, however much it cost when it came out. But like to pay $100 for it actually feels like chump change for the amount of hours of like entertainment I've gotten out of it. But like those are kind of the only two examples. Like I don't know that maybe there's a third one in something like, you know, like I know like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth was like a very long game. It was like 70-ish hour campaign and like it had such great production value, like with the cutscenes and everything. But even that, like, I don't think it's $100. I think it's...
I don't know if I part with $100.
Like, yeah. That. Like, but, like, I don't think... what about you? Like, where do you land on that?
Oh, man.
What does a $100 game have to kind of include? What has it got to be?
I honestly don't know. I don't know what a game would have to give me for me to feel good about it being $100. Like, it would have to be a game where... Okay. No, in some ways, GTA 6 kind of like starts checking those boxes. It would have to be a large open world game where every time I boot it up, I can have a unique experience, whether that's playing a campaign or just doing whatever. Because for $100, I have to feel like each experience is unique and entertaining. And of course, you know, games can, they run on scripts. And so there's only so many things you can do in a game. Well, if I'm paying $100, I need my first 50 sit downs to all feel distinct from one another.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to see like repeated dialogue. I need to have a very well-rounded and recognizable cast of characters. Because see, me, I'm a type of person, I can't stand these like lonely video games like Elden Ring and stuff where you're just a person in the world of monsters and beasts or whatever.
You kind of want some.
I like there to be a party character. And like I like the chatter. That's why I really liked Final Fantasy 13. Okay, my number's wrong.
15?
15! Yeah, there it is.
I think 15 was the one.
Wow, my numbers
are
way off.
I mean, there's so many.
But I really enjoyed 15 because of the way the characters would just chatter and argue all throughout the game. That was my favorite part. I'll swear by 15.
That game sucks, is awful, like something awful, but like it is so much fun.
Another game that was like that was the Guardians of the Galaxy video game. The Guardians are constantly arguing with one another throughout the entire gameplay experience. And I really enjoy things like that. If I get that that type of character interaction, but in a larger open world game, I think I could see myself breaking off $100. But here's the thing, Paul.
Okay.
What if we got everything we wanted, right?
Yeah.
But it came with something extra.
Okay.
Just a sprinkle of like kind of game breaking bugs.
Yeah, like I guess it's not like finished. You mean like not polished?
You know, there's a few bugs. You know, maybe you walk through the wall and then your character falls out the map.
I mean, I'm not paying $100 till it's finished.
Oh, okay, but you don't.
No, I guess like in an open world game, like
that, there will be updates to fix the numerous many bugs with the game.
I can live with that.
Really? So you'd break off the $100 right then and there?
Well, I think that it's more like. There has to be an understanding that, you know, it is generally very polished, but that if a bug is to come up, they will address it. I don't want to be like told, yeah, we just kind of shipped this. However, you know, we shipped it out with barely any quality testing. And yeah, that's not going to fly.
What if the game doesn't have any bugs, but it's missing one of the advertised features, but they say it's going to come in future DLC?
I'll wait until it's out. Yeah, that's my, I mean, like, I don't, it's, this is like a saying that comes up a lot in tech products, you know, like, don't buy products for the promise of, like, features to be added later and stuff. Okay, here's a thing that I also have is, like, would you pay $100 for Fortnite?
For Fortnite as it is today?
Mm-hmm. So here's what you get.
Okay.
You no longer have to buy battle passes.
Okay.
You just pay $100 and whatever content shows up just like shows up. Do you think that's worth $100 given like how much Fortnite you've played or how often you enjoy it? You think that's worth it?
Are they going to slow down the content update?
I mean, I can't say. But just given kind of what it is now, do you think that's like worth paying $100?
So this might not be the answer you're expecting. No.
That was the answer I was expecting, actually.
But I don't think you're expecting it for the reason I said no.
Okay.
Because I've already spent well over $100 in Fortnite. I've already bought so much in Fortnite that if they were to say, "All right, now just give us an extra $100, and now you can have everything," I'm like, "I'm in too deep, bro. You can't ask me for $100. You got like 1,000 off me or something." Like,
yeah, I guess like so what I'm almost getting at really is like. Is a game like a Fortnite or a Marvel Rivals where you get effectively infinite replayability because like...
Rivals can ask that of me.
So you'd pay like $100 for Marvel Rivals?
Yes.
Okay.
Because yeah. I have not spent $100 in Rivals.
All right. And then last thing that I'll add to this. You pay $100, you get Marvel Rivals, you will not get any like DLC skins or anything. You'll just get the base game and like that's just how much you have to pay.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. It's tricky because I think like we're in an age of gaming now where there's a lot of allure of games that are basically free to play anyway. Mm-hmm. You can download Fortnite, you can download Marvel Rivals, I can download Yu-Gi-Oh! Master Duel or whatever, and like just play them indefinitely and not really spend any money. And so I think it means that the times that a person is asked to spend money on like a AAA game, it's really got to be like the one game, right? Like GTA 6 will effectively become like 50% of your gaming repertoire for like the next few years for a lot of people. So I think in that case, it makes it feel like it's worth $100, I suppose. But I don't think that it's like, that can't be the norm. Like if all games try to be like $100, it's just people won't buy them. Like they will buy GTA 6. They will buy maybe the one major game of their one favorite franchise. And that's 2K. Like it. Yeah, then there's somebody buying 2K every year for $100. But, you know, like, that's just how it is. Like, I think that's going to be, if they ever want to try to price games that high, it's got to be, like, perfect.
And we're already talking about $80 games and $100 games. Boy, being a gamer is not cheap.
It's not.
Not for the unemployed or the underemployed like me.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. Here is some more, like, weird gaming news. Did you know that Nintendo of America almost gave Pikachu breasts?
I was really hoping this wouldn't come up.
When bringing the character over to the U.S.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, in a resurfaced interview with the Yomiuri Shimbun, series creator Tajiri Satoshi recalled Nintendo of America's early reaction to Pokemon during its 90s localization push. He says, "When I first showed Pokemon to them, they told me it was too cute," Tajiri said. "The staff at Nintendo of America then suggested their own designs for the characters. I won't show those illustrations to anyone as long as I live, but they kind of, but they kind of looked like the characters from the Cats musical." If you remember that shit.
They made him Jellicle?
Yeah, he says, "Pikachu was changed into a character shaped like kind of a tabby cat with huge breasts," Tajiri explained. "They presented that kind of design to us for real. I thought it was interesting in a sense of appreciating such cultural differences. However, I didn't want to compete in the overseas market with that kind of thing."
No, no, no.
Yeah, so the strange anecdote has circulated online for years, but it resurfaced after fans translated the original Japanese interview and confirmed that the word used did in fact refer to breasts, after many assumed that they meant chest, as the Japanese word mune can mean both. So,
oh, Jesus.
Yeah, even more surprising is this isn't the only redesign that was pitched. During a 2008 financial results briefing, Nintendo president at the time, Satoru Iwata, said that the company had once been shown a muscular Pikachu, suggesting we could have gotten tons of different designs.
Muscular Pikachu? Its arms are like this. You, for audio listeners, you can't see, but its arms like this big.
It's a little stub, yeah.
I don't know how you can make it muscular.
It definitely lets you know, like, you know, we were actually talking about this, I guess, a few days ago with Alex or something about how, like, just, or something, like, just kind of localization, things like that companies will do for localization.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Pikachu's breasts.
No,
I don't remember talking about this.
Well, but just, like, when things like Digimon and Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! Are all kind of being adapted over, even, like, Sonic the Hedgehog. Like, I'm a big Sonic fan, and a lot of people don't know, Sonic's design in the United States was just different. They used a different box art for him, like a different design. They made his quills like slightly differently shaped and kind of changed his expressions a little bit to look more like, at the time, 80s and 90s cartoons, because they thought that that was what would most appeal to Western audiences. Even so much as changing his like canon backstory at the time, like to kind of sound like something that's more, you know, Western friendly. I don't know. It's interesting to think that, like, thank God none of this stuff happened. That the thought gives me nightmares. I don't know how much of that, like, you know, that one movie Cats or the musical or whatever. I remember seeing trailers for that and being just nightmare fuel.
Yeah,
like actual nightmare fuel.
No, Pikachu doesn't need breasts, and we don't need muscular Pikachu either.
Yeah, if you want any of that, you can go to Rule 34. But for the rest of us,
or you just go to the Digimon franchise.
Yeah, they'll give it to you for free. No, like, Rule 34 required. Yeah,
your little pet turns into an Anjouamon when it gets to its adult form.
Yeah, I really am glad they didn't do this, but it is interesting to hear that, like, these were things that were considered. Like, they thought at some period of time that this is what would resonate with people. I wonder where do you think that came from?
So, I do know, so in the, like, the 80s of, like, sci-fi design, things got kind of sexual in the West. I say kind of very, you know. That's what we're getting a lot of these, like, in the fantasy genre, these chainmail bikinis. We're also getting, like, edgier characters. We're getting the, like, the Spawns and the
It's funny you mention that. I do think of American comics as a, that's definitely, like, a probably an inspiration there.
Because, I mean, then, because, you know, they spun off movies and, like, all sort, like, pop culture was, like, moving in a sexier direction in the West in the 80s. And so I think Nintendo of America could have been like, we gotta do this, you know?
Yeah, like, this is what, like, Americans will want. And I think that they also were probably,
thank,
like,
God, they didn't do that.
Maybe their intention was to aim more for, like, teens, young adults. Whereas, like, as the Pokemon that we ended up getting is much more of, like, a kid-friendly thing. And I think that's obviously for the best.
Yeah.
But,
I just looked up a picture.
Pikachu with breasts
musical.
Oh no.
Okay. And I was just like, yo, these can't be Pokemon.
Unlock big savings and add style and security to your home with high quality Schlage door locks from Menards. Whether you're looking for a traditional interior lock or a Wi-Fi compatible electronic lock, Menards has you covered. With more than 200 options of Schlage door locks in stock, save big on all door locks. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. That wouldn't be. Put it away.
That wouldn't be good.
Yeah, I don't want to see it. I think let's just say that I'm glad that we didn't go this route.
Agreed.
You know?
Agreed.
Okay, well, here's a question for you.
Uh-oh.
Why are Visa and MasterCard banning adult purchases?
They are?
Apparently they are. This is actually something of like a, it feels almost like a follow-up to last week where we were talking about, you know, this big push online for like ID sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And actually, since we talked about that, more and more websites have been doing the whole like ID verification stuff, claiming that it's to protect the kids from dangerous content. But in reality,
I haven't bumped into it yet.
You probably have. I mean, I don't know how much like what places you're using and stuff. And maybe it's more prominent still in like, you know, in Europe. But more and more sites have begun to experiment with different forms of that. Well, anyway, though, this is somewhat related.
Paul, this article that you linked here has a picture of what you would think is from like an adult website, but it's just a screenshot from Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah. But that doesn't, I mean, I don't know. That's just what they use for the article. But so earlier this month, a set of payment processors, including Visa and MasterCard, forced video game marketplaces to remove thousands of adult video games from their storefronts. So the financial companies forced gaming marketplaces Steam and itch.io, which I've never heard of that.
I'm familiar with itch. I don't use it, but I am familiar with it.
Yeah, to remove their library of not safe for work video games, or else customers would be prevented from using their credit cards to make purchases on the platforms. Itch.io was forced to de-index its entire NSFW library. And I guess Steam had to do... Steam, meanwhile, reportedly removed hundreds of titles from its storefront and has since enacted policy changes.
That's honestly incredible, because Steam's catalog of NSFW games is
monstrous. I know there's some shit down in the bowels of Steam. So it was met with heavy backlash from those arguing that the move is a slippery slope towards payment processors controlling what we watch, read, and play. This actually was started from a right-wing Australian lobbying group that issued an open letter in July demanding that payment processors take action against the gaming platforms after highlighting a video game featuring themes of grape. That sounds like what the youngsters would say.
Yeah.
I guess I'll say it to be safe from YouTube. And sexual assault. It called for all NSFW games to be banned as a result. So what do we think about this? About, I guess, the idea that like Visa and MasterCard, right? The company that likely controls your credit card, my credit card, whatever, telling you can't use your credit card to like purchase some adult material.
So I wish them well. I'm gonna get mine one way or another, but I gotta use like Bitcoin or whatever. Like I haven't run into it because I haven't really been soliciting those styles of like content lately, but I know me. If I'm trying to like get some shit,
yeah, you'll find a way.
I don't need a Visa card to do it.
I think that so I have a few takeaways from this. Yes, first of all, you're right. People are gonna get it.
How you gonna get it?
That's right. Me as well. No, but I think more importantly, like, it does still hurt these storefronts a lot, because particularly it sounds like itch.io has probably an even larger NSFW library, or at least a larger relative percentage of its library is that, maybe even compared to Steam. And so while, yes, there will be like the gooners like Alec who will go to whatever length they have to go to get these games, it means that it still bars the average person from engaging with these platforms now.
Are you saying I'm not average?
If the shoe fits.
Wow.
But yeah, you know, like, so that is still harmful. And then more importantly, it is Visa and MasterCard telling you what you can and can't watch.
They're telling you what you can or can't purchase.
Effectively, right? Like, you know. And so I don't like that. I do think that, like, it's the same as, like, last week's story where you can say all you want that it's, like, this is to protect people from, like, unsafe content online. But if they're telling you they as in like a company, Visa, MasterCard, whatever, are like telling you what you can't buy with your own like money. It just rubs you the wrong way.
Especially if it's something that's not actually illegal. And there are legal things we can buy that are way more harmful than some random porn game on Steam. I can go buy like 6 packs of cigarettes like right now if I want to. Actually, I can't. I'm broke. But if I did have the
there money. There is that, you know, that actually you mentioning that brings up another one of those funny things about like kind of the puritanical controlling of like what you buy with money, where like, it's okay for Alec to buy a bunch of cigarettes and alcohol, let's say, but you can't purchase
alcohol. I didn't say all
you
that.
You can't purchase NSFW games on Steam. It's like, who am I to tell you what like is good for you? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Basically, if you want to indulge in, like, I guess sin, we'll call it
debauchery
and sin. Why is like, you know, one sin like it's like kind of the selective sin, like. You can do it as long as you're doing like the sins that like I say are okay, which is like smoking cigarettes. But I say that like watching porn isn't okay. So you don't get to do that. And also like I'm choosing how you spend that money. So like if you try to make purchase A, I will allow it. If you try to make purchase B, I will not allow it. But like it's people's money.
But now we have more ways to move around money than we ever did before because all these websites and different currencies we can use. Now you can just have like, you know, you can have your grocery card, you can have, you know, your credit card, and you got your porn card, you know, just different cards for different sources, you know, maybe help you like keep up with your finances a little bit better.
Yeah. One last thing that I'll, one last thing I should add is that I think it all, at the end of the day, it also just seems like they're, like, treating adults like kids. Like, in all seriousness, you know, we joke about, like, oh, people are gooners. But, like, people are adults. Like, they can choose what they want to engage in, right?
That's
like,
true. But I think the counter issue is that kids are acting like adults as well.
I suppose so. But, yeah, so one petition, which has nearly 200,000 signatures at the time of reporting, argues that the move amounts not just to overreach, but blatant hypocrisy. They say adults are capable of choosing what they want to watch, read, or play. The petition continues. If someone doesn't like a certain type of content or entertainment, the solution is simple. Walk away.
Yep.
No one is forced to engage with content they find offensive, but they have no right to dictate what others are allowed to enjoy, especially if it's within the bounds of the law.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with that. You know, it's just I've just never been a fan of, like, here's what you can and can't do with your money. Like, people can agree or disagree about, like, whether you should spend your money on something, but I don't think they should ever control whether you can do it.
I do agree.
Makes sense.
I wish we could just corral all the children to, like, one part of the internet so they couldn't bother the rest of us real people. I mean, adults.
It brings me back to that shit from last week. There are no kid spaces online now.
No.
I say no. I mean, I'm sure there are some, but like they are slowly, right after the other like podcast we did, I saw that they were taking all the Cartoon Network shows off of one of these like streaming services, like HBO Max or something, like its entire Cartoon Network library is like being removed. It's like a headline I saw. And I was just like, Christ, like.
So I actually have a new theory on the whole removal of like kids spaces.
Yeah,
it's a little messed up. Basically the idea is, you know, back in like 2002 2003, the entire internet was kid spaces because a lot of adults didn't really know how to use it that well, and kids were like taking to it and like and just learning and growing with it,
right?
And so there were kid spaces everywhere, but kids kept growing with it, and then we became who we are today, and we just turned those kid spaces into adult spaces. We didn't leave. It wasn't like, okay, now that I'm 18, I'm going to leave all the websites and forums and spaces I used to exist in and move on to the adult ones. No, you just turned whatever spaces you were into adult spaces now, because why would you change like that?
I think that you have a point there. I don't think that applies across all of them. Like, I think,
yeah, I mean, that's true.
Obviously, like a bespoke website like nick.com or cartoonnetwork.com.
But
that's,
I feel
not,
like there was somebody.
Somebody who's probably willing to try. But I get what you mean about like people who kind of grew up as like young kids or teens on social, or those early social medias. We're talking like kind of your maybe early Tumblr, maybe early like Gaia Online comes to mind. Or
I mean, at one point, Reddit was a bunch of kids.
Yeah, Newgrounds, a lot of like forums and stuff, where the clientele might have been a little bit younger, but just as they aged, so too did the subject matter and content. And we effectively kind of forgot to leave anything behind for people who are our age when we got into it.
I find it so weird. A lot of us started our Facebook accounts when we were in like high school or something. You know, if you're in my age group. And a lot of us just still have those same exact accounts we had as children. That means at one point, that Facebook account was a kid's space.
So, or something like that. Facebook seems like it's a hard example to use with that, but I get the gist.
When I started my Facebook account, I was in high school, and all my friends were just other children.
Yeah, a high schooler space, effectively. Young adult kind of became... I get what you mean.
Just share bigoted opinions and argue.
Yeah, and it's like, you're right. There hasn't been like much of a replacement. And then every time I read a new headline about like, here's the next thing that's kind of being removed off of this streaming service, it's like, well, shit. Like, where is a 9-year-old supposed to go for entertainment on the internet? Because like, if they go on Twitter or Reddit, shit.
Is Kai Cenat streaming?
Right, I guess they just find that. So interesting. Visa and MasterCard are trying to ban adult purchases of games, and that might continue. I don't like it.
But when they say, I guess, is this limited to just gaming? Because there's plenty of adult purchases I can make that they might want to stop. I don't know.
You know, a couple years ago, it was MasterCard or Visa. One of them was doing that thing with Pornhub where like that you couldn't use MasterCard or something on it.
But I can still buy like a chain and a ball gag, right?
Okay, well, anyways, the next story.
Just saying we're stopping adult purchases.
Yeah. I think they don't want the curated adult content, but they won't stop you from getting creative with what you can buy at the local Walmart.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, go to the hardware store and find things to your heart's content.
Nah, there's fetish stores for that.
Yeah, but it's more fun when it kind of feels like it just came from...
It's homegrown.
We're homegrown, yeah. Okay, well, speaking of streaming services... Hulu app is to be phased out as Disney is fully integrating the service into Disney Plus.
I guess I kind of expected it, though. I feel like Disney Plus should have been molded into Hulu. I mean, Hulu's been around longer, but I guess Disney's more of a recognizable name.
Yeah, say ciao to the standalone Hulu streaming app. Disney said it is fully integrating the Hulu service, which it now owns 100%, into its flagship Disney Plus streamer.
That reminds me. Wait, when did they take full ownership of Hulu? I thought a bunch of businesses had pieces of that.
That was years ago. I feel like Disney bought it like a... I don't know exactly the year, but I kind of remember reading that headline. This reminds me of Crunchyroll when it like bought Funimation.
Because I think Funimation was...
Yeah, Sony owns Crunchyroll, and I think it like bought Funimation and just had like Crunchyroll basically like consume Funimation or something like that. Yeah, a new unified Disney Plus and Hulu streaming app will be available in 2026, the company said. According to a Disney rep, customers will still be able to buy a standalone Hulu subscription as well as a standalone Disney Plus plan. Okay, what?
In January, they finally bought out everybody from Hulu.
Ah, so Disney did?
Yep.
Okay.
Because it used to be a joint venture. I guess Disney said, nah, that's ours.
Yeah, so CEO Bob Iger and CFO Hugh Johnston said that today we're announcing a major step forward in strengthening our streaming offering by fully integrating Hulu into Disney Plus. It'll create an impressive backlog of entertainment, pairing the highest caliber, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, I guess you are able to have a Hulu subscription and have a Disney Plus subscription separate, but I guess what would be the point of that?
Well...
Is it cheaper?
I know right now you can have a there's like a bundle deal where if you have Disney Plus, you also have Hulu. I think you pay like a slight increased amount for the Disney Plus, but it just comes with Hulu at that point.
Yeah.
So they've kind of been paired together for a little while now.
It just makes me wonder, why would you even have a separate one? Like, do people have separate ones of that? Like, I feel like in 2025, if you have Hulu, you probably just have the Hulu X Disney Plus thing. Like
you can have or. Some people, okay. if you just specifically don't want Hulu at all, you can have Disney Plus, because that was how I was rolling with Disney Plus. I had a Disney Plus, I didn't have Hulu, but Alex has both.
Okay, I bought like a...
That's why I canceled mine.
I bought something recently, and it was like, I think I bought like a... I got HBO Max, so we could finish watching, what was the anime, Lazarus? And like, it was on HBO Max.
Yes, that's right.
And then I got some email where it was like, sign up for some other things with your plan or something. I was like, I don't know. Either way, whatever. The point is, yeah, no more Hulu. It's now going to be all in Disney Plus. Although they still seem to be using the Hulu name, but you'll just be using one app. So I guess when you have just a Hulu account, you will have the Disney Plus app on your like smart TV or whatever. But maybe any Disney Plus stuff will be like grayed out, right? And like you can only maybe watch the...
That is a lot of confusing, but hey, I don't run a multi-billion dollar media empire.
I guess what I'm almost noticing really happening is like we are, you know, like we got all these individual streaming services and it kind of sounded like a great alternative to cable because, you know, cable would cost you like $100 a month and you get a bunch of channels, you wouldn't use most of them. You only had cable to watch a few things and maybe some people in your family watch some other stuff. So when stuff like Netflix came around, it was attractive because like, you know, when Netflix was like $7 a month or something, you pay like $7 or $8 a month and you get just their library of things that you want to watch and it seemed like a good deal. Then all these different streaming services tried to compete with Netflix and so now it's like they're all buying the rights to different shows, especially like old shows that get rewatched, like The Office and all that. Like, you know, The Office is on Netflix this month, but like soon HBO is going to own it or whatever, you know. And like eventually it came to the point where you needed to have your HBO, your Amazon Prime, your this, your that, your Crunchyroll, and now you have like 5 or 6 different streaming subscriptions that are costing you about as much as what cable cost you before. Then they kind of started to do what this is, or like they would start combining. Or it's like, oh, if you buy like
them.
You buy Hulu, you'll also get like ESPN Plus and blah blah blah. And I think like it all has just started to sort of just fall in on itself, and they all just kind of want to buy each other up. And
it got too competitive. Everybody wanted a slice of that Netflix pie, since at one point they were riding high. They were unobstructed. They didn't really have any competition in their space, and they were killing it. And every time a new one dropped, they took another slice, another slice, another slice. And then nobody could keep their prices low. Everyone had to find some way to become more competitive. Production prices increased, and then the pandemic.
Yeah, it just all kind of came to a head. So, would you say you prefer it this way? Like, I guess just.
It's absolutely not.
Simpler to buy like a Disney Plus subscription.
I think the world was in a better place media consumption wise for me when I did not have cable, I did not have subscriptions to any streaming services, and I stole everything I watched. Wow. I was a serious pirate, did not have any type of cable, and I didn't have any subscriptions. I had a few websites and I'd watch every show on those websites illegally.
Yeah, and a lot of those sites have, I guess, been taken down.
You know, that was the pirate lifestyle. You just find a new one, you pivot, you move, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, part of me is like, I guess if I can only have one service, that's nice. But, like, I don't even watch enough of any of these things. Like, the only thing I think that, the only subscription that, like, I think is worthwhile for me is, like, Crunchyroll. Because I get so much value out of, like, watching Crunchyroll. So you're going to get
a Crunchyroll then?
I'm going to keep using yours.
That's what I thought you were going to say.
But you can use my HBO Max that I recently got. So we can share. Although knowing both of our luck, soon they're going to start doing some like home system where nobody can use anything. Because like if you're not at the IP address or whatever.
I'm sure they will.
But until then, I will bum off of it. Anyway, that's Hulu and Disney and fun things in that department.
Speaking of Disney.
Okay. Speaking of Disney.
So they announced the Spider-Verse spinoff, Spider-Punk, with Daniel I can never say his last name. Kaluuya?
Is it? I thought it was Kaluuya.
Kaluuya? That's you talking about rum?
I'm just ignoring him.
Spider-Punk. You know, he what's his name in the Hobie Brown, I think his name is. Anyway, so Spider-Punk is a spinoff of 2023's hit Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. It is in early development at Sony Pictures Animation. Daniel, who voiced the character in a comic book sequel, and Ajahn Singh are developing and co-writing the feature. And of course, we don't know any plot details. It's a spinoff of Spider-Verse. If you like it, then cool.
Yeah.
I actually don't like it. And it's not because I don't like the character, the premise, or even the original work.
Why do you not like it?
Because we're getting a spinoff announcement and they haven't even released the next Spider-Verse movie.
You know, that's true. Isn't that movie like, you know what's funny? I remember when we saw Through the Spider-Verse. We saw Through the Spider-Verse. Or was that
Beyond the
Spider-Verse? No, the first one's Into the Spider-Verse. The second one's like Through the Spider-Verse or whatever. And then the last one's like Beyond the Spider-Verse. That's right. And that's the one that's not out yet. I remember we saw the middle one. And I really enjoyed the movie and it got great critical acclaim. I remember when we saw it with like Chris and Alex and we were at this really cool theater that had like it served food. It was a really memorable experience. And that was in like 2022 or something. And I remember them saying like, yeah, the next movie's going to be out in like 2023 or something like that. Yeah, 2023.
They said like December of the next year.
Yeah. And that got quickly delayed to the extent that like we still like only very recently got confirmation that it is going to be coming out in 2027.
For now.
2027, like summer 2027, which yeah, let's hope it doesn't get delayed further. And it's just kind of crazy because like that's not out and they're like announcing this and it's like, okay.
Like it goes into, I know Marvel said they're gonna slow things down. Or it's actually Sony, not Marvel. But I know, like, the superhero fatigue thing has been setting in, and a lot of movie studios they know not to rush content the way they did, like during and pre-pandemic. But why is Sony announcing this so soon after already putting their own foot in their mouths over Beyond the Spider-Verse's release date? We don't even know if we're gonna, we don't even know if we like Beyond the Spider-Verse yet. And you're like, hey, well, if you like that, you'll like this spinoff. Well, I don't know if I like that. I've seen two parts out of a trilogy. The third part is still years out the way. And what, you've got a producer and an actor and you're going to go ahead and just announce it now? I don't believe this.
So I know there's a crowd of people that really like these announcements. These kind of get them excited and kind of gives you something to look forward to. I'm like with many things and probably used to, I'm somewhere torn because I'm torn, but I lean towards like, I kind of just wish they wouldn't. Like, I remember the days of like the San Diego Comic-Con Hall H Marvel shows,
right,
where you'd see these those images, the black image where it's like the little timeline of like all these shows and movies and here's when they're going to come out. And there were certain Marvel fans, like people that I knew, that like loved this stuff to death. They loved the idea of the announcement of these shows and these characters and like just this timeline, like, you know, in 2017 this is going to come out in February, and this is going to come out in June, and this one's going to come out in November. And like, and you had like, you just had this plan, this projected timeline. To me, though, like, I have found myself less and less enthralled with that because all the stuff ends up ever getting, like, it gets, like, delayed and stuff and pushed back. And I think that when people know too much about a timeline, it can kind of spoil your ability to enjoy an individual piece of media. So, like, there was this interview recently with Kevin Feige. You know, he's been doing his little interview run. It's, like, the same interview run we were talking about with the Fantastic Four stuff. Yeah,
Fantastic Four.
Where he's like, yeah, you know, after Secret Wars, we're going, like, Secret Wars is going to reboot the MCU, and then, like, we're going to be changing some stuff after that. And I'm just like, why are you, like, telling me that? Like, let that just happen on screen. Because now it almost feels like when I'm sitting here watching Fantastic Four or watching Doomsday or whatever, it almost just makes me think, well, does any of this matter? Like, I kind of know where it's all leading, which is that someone's going to, like, snap their fingers or whatever, and the whole universe gets reset, and that's their excuse for it. But, like, do I need that much of a fourth wall break in the knowledge there? Like, I don't want to know that. I'd like to just find that out in... There's something crazy outside.
Yeah. What is that?
But I'd like to just find that out in 2027 when Secret Wars comes out, assuming it doesn't get delayed too. You know, like, at the end of the movie when that's the grand ending and someone sacrifices themselves and someone creates a whole new universe, whatever. But, like, let me find that out in the theater, because now everything that I watch feels slightly diminished and undermined, because I know that come Secret Wars, how it's going to end. And it's like, I don't like knowing so much about what's coming next, because I feel like, to bring it almost back to maybe a quick Yu-Gi-Oh thing, it's like, I don't like to really know what's in the OCG. I would, you know, it just kind of gets annoying when people are like, they can't focus on the game here in front of them, because it's like, yeah, but when so-and-so releases and so-and-so gets this stuff, yeah, then the meta is going to have blah, blah, blah. It's like, then it gets good. And it's like, yeah, so I'm not a fan. This is nothing against the idea of the Spider-Punk movie. I'll be in theaters. I'll see it. It sounds cool. I just think, like, announce it when you actually have a trailer to show.
Yeah, something tangible, because, like, do you remember San Diego Comic-Con 2019?
I think so.
Yeah, that's when they announced Blade.
Oh, yeah, I know.
2019.
And, like, we haven't done shit since.
They had Mahershala Ali. They had the little title logo. And it's like, and we're in 2025 now.
Still no sign of, like, a release date.
Still don't have a Blade. We don't even have a trailer for Blade. So that encapsulates how much I hate these extremely early announcements.
Yeah, I'm just not a fan. I know that for superhero fans, I think that this is how they kind of get people's appetites wet. It's just,
and other things.
And other things too. Yeah. I don't know. Not a fan of the idea of announcing things. A fan of the work, like, sure, it's the Spider-Verse great.
No. Get on, stand on it. Tell everybody you hate Spider-Man.
Spider-Man
sucks. Specifically, Miles Morales. Say that's not your Spider-Man.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, you're laughing too much, so I have a story to bring you back down to earth.
Oh, no.
It's AI.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, fine.
Yeah, so you shouldn't have been enjoying yourself, because now we got to bring something a little bit dystopian into the mix.
You know how I feel about artificial intelligence.
And this one's actually, like, this one's really pretty fucked up. I think you're going to fundamentally hate this. It's on our raindrop. Amazon invests in Netflix of AI, air quotes, startup Fable, which launches Showrunner, a tool for user-directed TV shows.
So, I already want to vomit.
Yeah, this is crazy to me, because basically it is an AI-generated TV show service where just everything on it is AI-generated. Like, you know, like right now when you hear a news story of, like, maybe, like, this Netflix show you watch use a little bit of AI in the opening or in and it's, like, kind of controversial. Imagine a streaming service where all the shows, everything is AI-generated. Not only that, but apparently the gimmick of this service, Fable, is that it's a service that lets you type in a few words to create scenes or entire episodes of a TV show, either from scratch or based on an existing story world that somebody else created.
This is a complete waste of time and money.
So I guess the idea here is that, like, you could, like, let's say you like, I don't know, Game of Thrones, Rick and Morty, whatever show, and its existing assets kind of exist, like, they're there, and you can type in a prompt, make me an episode of Game of Thrones where so-and-so happens and that person marries that person and so-and-so dies, go. And, like, you enter the prompt and it will quite literally generate
a copyright nightmare.
Yeah, well, now I'll get into that in a second. It will generate, like, an episode of that. Now, what I'm not sure of is what, like, IPs are actually even going to be available for this. It says they will be, initially, Showrunner, it lets users tinker with the animation-focused generative AI system. They had, like, a closed alpha. It's going to charge creators $10 to $20 per month for credits that allow them to create hundreds of TV scenes. And anybody can share the AI video on third-party platforms. What I'm wondering about, though, is what IPs will be available. They say Fable is in talks about creating a partnership with Disney, among other Hollywood studios, about licensing IP for the showrunner platform.
Nah.
So you can, I guess, maybe make your own Star Wars episode if you're willing to pay or something.
I would hope not a single creative on this planet will license out their work to this garbage pile. I mean, I know some they can probably offer enough money for somebody, but I just hope no one does. This is such an affront to just TV and movies, film, artists everywhere, honestly. Oh, Jesus.
It's atrocious. Like, listen, you know, this is like this feels so dystopian to me. Like, it's just, you're sitting in front of your TV just knowingly watching AI-generated television. Like, it's not even a matter of it being, like, snuck into, like, a movie or something. It's like, you are on this platform that just advertised itself blatantly as, like, create AI shows with, like, your favorite characters or scenes. And what I hate the most about it is that I know that with a little bit of clever marketing trickery and just the general masses, there will be people who probably fucking love this. Like, there will be, like, the average person who does not seem to really care, and they just think of it as... Because what they'll do is, like, they'll kind of leave out the word AI or kind of whatever, and, like, they'll just present it...
No, they'll put AI in it. People love the word AI.
Yeah, it'll be something where they'll just make it seem like, oh, like, you know, wouldn't it be funny if you could make an episode of South Park? Right? Like, you had a funny concept for a South Park episode, now you can just bring it to life. And... there's so many, the amount of different concerns I have, I don't even know where to begin. Because outside of, like, you know, the brain rot concept of literally just consuming AI-made shows, it's like, what are the guardrails?
I want to watch an episode of Game of Thrones where Cersei Lannister kicks Jon Snow in the balls.
Yeah, like, you know, like, can you just generate, like, sexual content in a show that doesn't normally have it? Can you generate violence in, like, a kid's show? Like, they'll say that you can't, but then what happens when somebody just tricks the AI anyway?
It happens all the time. People play, okay, they run game on these AI scripts. They'll figure out all sorts of little tricks to make the AI do what they want.
Yeah, I remember the old thing with, like, ChatGPT, where it's like, read me bedtime stories like my dead grandmother used to read out, like, Windows install codes to me to get me to go to sleep. And it would do that and would give you, like, Windows keys. You know, it doesn't do that anymore or whatever. But, like, there's always someone who's going to push the boundaries on this. And, like, I just, like, AI-generated TV.
Yeah. I mean... I'm starting to think this article is just satire. Because, like...
No, multiple sources... This is Variety. Multiple sources have corroborated this. Amazon invested in this company.
There's no way this gets off the ground. Not in any meaningful fashion.
Well, what it needs to get off the ground is money, so...
And it will be immediately hit with so many, like, cease and desist...
I mean,
I can't see this actually.
It sounds like what they want to do is get partnerships, like I said, with Disney. But I guess the other stuff on the platform would just be, like, garbage. Like, it is just, like, literally AI-made shows that you can then further AI modulate, like, or something. I'm not...
Because I feel like when it comes to, like, TV and movies, there's just too many stakeholders for me to pull off the, like, licensing deals like that. This isn't a simple matter of, you know, I just want... a license to Star Wars. It's like, well, what about the likenesses of all the actors, their voices? I don't know. I don't know if a...
Here's something else. Fable's showrunner public launch features two original shows, use air quotes, story worlds with characters users can steer into various narrative arcs. The first is Exit Valley, which is described as a Family Guy-style TV comedy set in San Francisco, satirizing the AI tech leaders Sam Altman, Elon Musk, etc. The other is Everything is Fine. in which a husband and wife going to IKEA have a huge fight, whereupon they're transported to a world where they're separated and have to find each other. So,
okay, if they're working off of works that were created to be AI generated within this endless sandbox vomit world, then fine. I think that can get off the ground.
Yeah.
But I just don't see working with large copyrighted IPs.
I don't see that working. Here's one last thing. The showrunner system lets users insert themselves into a TV show's world too, which has proven to be a popular use case among the alpha testers.
So my character walks into Black Widow's bedroom.
I think that once people can like self-insert, no pun intended, into these worlds, troubling.
If this did get off the ground, I can promise you one person who will not touch it with a stick. This guy. I'm pointing at me, audio listeners.
I hate it. I knew you would get a kick out of this story, so.
This ruined my whole day.
Yeah. Somebody actually sent that to us on Twitter as well.
All right, they person knew who love sent it. This on Twitter. You ruined my day.
Just a reminder, by the way, you can follow the Pot of Greed specifically on Twitter, as well as Team APS and all that other stuff. But, just your daily dose of, like, nihilistic dystopia or whatever. AI story.
It's one of the worst things I've heard. And there was a very violent event in Georgia today.
Okay, well, I guess it's time to do a little pot.
Sure, something to take my mind off this.
Yeah, well, we've got great questions from the viewers. Thank you guys, as always, for submitting them. You can submit questions to the Pot of Greed down below at the link in the description. So here's what we've got. I've got a couple of actually interesting ones. They're both Yu-Gi-Oh! Related.
Okay.
The first one is, what would you think of an AI in Master Duel as a raid, like in Pokemon Go, where everybody gets some kind of reward like gems? So they're using AI in here, but I guess they're really just talking about like AI in the sense of like it's like a computer opponent.
It's an NPC.
Enemy. Yeah. Like, so I guess a game like Master Duel having raid battles. Or maybe they even mean Duel Links or something.
I mean, well, Duel Links already has.
Does it have raid battles?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know. I know Crossduel also tried to do.
Yeah, I mean, raids are very like simple things and have been incorporated into like freemium gaming since.
Probably a long time.
Decades at this point. Decade. I'm surprised Master Duel hasn't had some type of a raid system just to, you know, make the duels a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, you know me. I mean, anything to mix up the formula with Master Duel is welcome in my book. Like, Master Duel, it's no secret, has a problem with like lack of just game variety. You play ranked ladder or you die, right? Like, it's kind of the two options. Some would say they're the same thing. And like, granted, you know, I wonder what the rule set would be around like a Yu-Gi-Oh! Raid duel. Like, would it kind of be, how did it work in, what was that Yu-Gi-Oh! Movie? Bonds Beyond Time? With Yugi Jaden and...
Yeah, Bonds Beyond Time.
Where they dueled against...
Was that Paradox?
Yeah, like Paradox or whatever. And he...
Malefic Paradox Dragon.
Yeah, and it was like a 3-on-1 duel. How did they do that? Was it like... I'm trying to remember. Like, was it like they each took a turn and then he took one turn? Or was it like I take a turn, he takes a turn. You take a turn, he takes a turn. And another person... I don't remember how that worked.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I'd have to rewatch it. But, like, I think that could be kind of cool. Like, basically the idea of, like, a boss monster that it can't be, like... Because I think the problem that you get with, like, trying to play Yu-Gi-Oh! In a raid format is, like, using modern decks would still just, like, stomp a lot of competition. So, like, if you go first and you make your unbreakable board of Barones and Opelousas and whatever, like, negating things, there would have to be some sort of a thing that... allows this NPC opponent to easily break those or threaten them.
Well, I think in most games with raids, the idea is that the enemy's health pool is so large that it's actually inconceivable for current established strategies to actually take it down. Mm-hmm. So this thing could have so much or so many life points that you're bored of like negates. It's cute. You're not taking this thing down without optimizing for it, though.
Right. I think what would be kind of interesting was, like, maybe it has a certain amount of negations it can use per turn. Like,
or maybe it can't even be affected by
card effects. Or like it's unaffected by card effects until you break its shields type of thing. Like it'll maybe kill
destroy like all of its monsters.
Certain amount of mobs. It's almost like literally like a raid in an RPG. That seems fun, actually. I would like that. I also like the idea of maybe even it having like these random effects that apply to the entire raid, but like maybe only for one turn or for like one round of turns. It's like, okay, now he puts skill drain into effect. Mm-hmm. So it affects all three of you, but only until the end of the next turn or whatever. Or he might does like a eradicator epidemic virus and it affects all three or however many of the duelists, three or four duelists for each of their next turn, they're under eradicator.
So like I guess I was under a bit of a wrong impression. So I was thinking of it in more of the mobile game style of raid where multiple players play like asymmetric duels against the same NPC opponent.
Oh, okay.
But you're thinking more of the cross duel, more of like the MMORPG style of raid, where you're actually all in the same instance together battling.
Right. I'm thinking like 3v1 or like 4v1. But your idea also sounds cool.
Well, I mean, it's been done. Like in Duel Links, enemies will have like, you'll spawn the enemy, you and your entire friend list can see it, and you can all battle it. The thing is, the enemy is not that hard to beat, but its life point total is so high that it will take all of you dealing an incredible amount of damage, not just enough to wipe out its like whatever its in-game life points are. You need to deal more than the 8,000.
You just have to make your contribution and then log off type of thing. Like you're passing the baton almost maybe to the next person. Mm-hmm. Or okay. Because I was thinking like, I almost think of like the Pokemon Scarlet and Violet raid battles, for instance, where it's just like 4v1 or whatever it is. And
yeah, where they completely morph the rules of a Pokemon battle so you can make it into a raid. I get that.
Yeah, the raid
boss that can be cool too.
Shields or something.
I really did enjoy the cross duel raids. It's a shame that the game didn't make it.
Yeah, well, here's the next question. Let me find it. Okay. This one's a long one. Prepare yourself.
I am prepared.
My name is Jacob. I've been listening to the podcast for a while. I enjoy the variety of topics. A question I thought would make for an interesting discussion is this. Can Yu-Gi-Oh! Make anything iconic again? Magic has their own IP and universes beyond to grow their player base, and Cardfight Vanguard has an anime to showcase the cards, and both have some very striking alternate arts. Not to mention games like Pokemon, whose iconic cast is a Pokemon for each person to have a favorite, new and old. And they kind of go on. But even with archetypes, most Yu-Gi-Oh! Players don't seem to care about the story, just if the cards are meta-relevant. Legacy support for iconic monsters like Dark Magician and Blue Eyes are interesting to casual fans like myself, but seem to just make the existing Yu-Gi-Oh! Fans groan. In my opinion, Yu-Gi-Oh! Has some great artwork, but it's not showcased as much because of the importance of text on each card. I propose doing something similar to how Vanguard does. Similar arts for cards where it showcases the art itself and the text blends in with the background since players can remember the effects of the cards. For example, look at Polyphonic Overdrive Artesia card. Maybe look that card up.
Yeah,
Basically, can Yu-Gi-Oh! Progress the way it is currently with such an emphasis on the competitive aspect of the game? And how do you think they could showcase their modern designs that resonate with the casual fan base? Sorry for rambling. Thanks very much for the podcast. I always look forward to listening more. Okay, so yeah, there's a lot with that, but I do think I have the gist of what this person is saying. Is like, can Yu-Gi-Oh! Kind of make something that is distinctly cool about its game, similar, like a la Magic Universes Beyond, or right, kind of like an anime thing? We have this conversation a bunch, really. Is like, does Yu-Gi-Oh! Have the power to still do that? I will say I think yes, but I think that it just comes down to, like, is Konami willing to take that risk shake that boat?
The problem Yu-Gi-Oh! Has is its adherence to tradition.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't like shaking up card design. They have resisted just about every new, like, change in the card game sphere.
I know. Full arts, rotation, simultaneous releases across like all territories at the same time.
Having mixed an rarities, anime.
And apparently even having an anime.
Like, it feels like there have to be a shift in the leadership and thinking when it comes to Yu-Gi-Oh! In order to make something iconic again. Yu-Gi-Oh! Had iconic when it first came out. It invented TCG iconic to some degree. I mean, Pokemon and Magic already existed. But
I get what you mean, though. It was the first major, like, card game anime where when you play the game, you are enacting what you saw on TV. That was, I think, its like, big X factor.
The cards looked the same way as it did in the anime. I mean, roughly, not exactly, of course.
Yugi summoned similar. Dark Magician, and you quite literally could do it in the same way that he could.
When I saw that, well, because what was it? When I got my videotape from Toys R Us inviting me to Duelist Kingdom, at the end of the tape, they advertised the cards. And I couldn't believe it when I saw, like, a Blue Eyes White Dragon card and, like, a Mammoth Graveyard card. I'm like, whoa. I know these cards.
Yeah.
And now I will be able to physically have them. That's iconic. Like, that mirroring between, you know, video media and physical media. Many things have tried to do it. I don't think anything knocked it out the park the same way Yu-Gi-Oh! Did. But I think then that married us to the design of the cards.
Yeah, I think that what Yu-Gi-Oh! Is really struggling with is exactly what you said. They don't want to rock the boat. And maybe even more importantly, they don't seem to want to rock the boat in North America. Or, like, I guess we'll just say the TCG territories as a whole. Because, like, Japan did Rush Duel. And I think Rush Duel, that was a big...
I like me some Rush Duel.
That was a big risk on their part, like, to do that. But they did it. And from what I hear, it does quite well in Japan. It's not as popular as, like, the OCG card game is, but, like, kids play it. It has a big following. The sales are strong. And, like, and it has overrush rares. It's willing to explore these rarities and, like, you know, kind of full art styles and stuff that the TCG or just the original card game just does not do. And I think that Yu-Gi-Oh's got baggage in that department.
Here is Polyphonic Overdrive Artisaria. Just for an idea of what he's talking about.
Yeah, okay, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, like these games are, it's like full art and yeah. You know.
Boy, Yu-Gi-Oh cards would be hard to read now.
Yeah, I know. They have so much text. I hate to, like, circle the drain on this same old tired point.
We get it. We need to have mid-core.
No, for a change, that's not what I was going to say. But honestly, safe guess. You know, like, the game probably needs a new anime and, like, needs a reboot. Like, it would help. A series that I thought was fading into obscurity that is, like, now I feel having a big resurgence and is willing to take those leaps is, like, Digimon. We talk about this a lot, and I was just like, oh, you know, like, Digimon's kind of just, like, it's just out of the zeitgeist. But, like, now they're doing the Elysian game, they're doing the Time Stranger game, they have, like, the new anime that's also happening, like, all in the same year, and it's funny because it kind of makes Yu-Gi-Oh! Look like the just archaic, unchanging, inflexible old game where
the old man on the block.
It has no anime happening, and you know, its last kind of interesting game, Cross Duel, got like shut down, and so all you're really getting in terms of recent games is like Early Days Collection, which by the way just got Dungeon Dice Monsters online play like just the other day.
Oh snap!
We maybe should like make a video on that, but
I need that.
Yeah, so it just. I think, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Needs a new anime and probably could afford, like, rebooting the cards. Because I think the only way that you really get to do, like, full arts with Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards is, like, the effects are going to have to be shorter.
Yeah, I mean, it...
It just, you can't do it with the length that effects
Yu-Gi-Oh!
Are.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards still need to be read. Because you can memorize the effect of a card. That is actually not enough for Yu-Gi-Oh! Nowadays. You get into complex ruling situations where you need to read the text. Where is the semicolon? Is there a semicolon? Is the sentence end or is this an and? Are these effects simultaneous or are they happening one at a time?
Yeah, and you just don't get to skimp on that.
You need to be able to read the cards. And so the current text fading to the background thing is cute work. On vanillas.
Yeah, it can't work. Like Yu-Gi-Oh! As in its current form, yeah, it just can't have cards like that. Like you'd have to have a simplified game for that to work. So
I sadly do agree. I don't think it's a bad idea in general, it looked cool. It's just for Yu-Gi-Oh! Right now, it's a little rough.
Yeah. So, interesting. That's a good question, though. Like, as far just to get like to explore maybe the other idea of like what else could they do that's iconic besides like what we've already said. I don't think people want to see like universes beyond with Yu-Gi-Oh. I think like it just seems so unrealistic that it would happen. People already don't like it that much with Magic, so.
I mean, or they do and they don't like it. It's just Magic players.
The new don't people like do. The old much. People don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you guys should try it, huh?
But would that be iconic anymore? Because see, now that everyone else is doing it, can you be iconic copying other people?
If you're just another collab game, like, does it even?
Yeah, like I don't even know, because every other card game is trying to be so groundbreaking nowadays. They're eating up all that room for iconic.
Yeah, like there's something to be said about how Yu-Gi-Oh does stick to its guns and like, but you could view that as like it's sticking to its guns, but also like. Resting on its laurels. Like, how do you want to, you know, like I still think that they need to catch up to competition in some regards, but
because it's a shame that in a weird way Magic is a hotter game than Yu-Gi-Oh, because they every few months they pump out a new Universes Beyond set that eclipses almost the entire TCG
space,
and Yu-Gi-Oh is like by Doom of Dimensions.
Yeah, it makes Yu-Gi-Oh! Feel a lot like what I was saying before. It makes them feel antiquated. It's like the Overton window of what a card game can be now feels broad, but Yu-Gi-Oh! Feels like it still kind of in some ways just lives in the past. It lives in a very predictable past, yeah. Like that is stable, we'll say, and like, you know, reliable, but it is in no way adventurous or innovative. So,
which is crazy because this is the game where you can play out like your entire hand and make these insane like 10-minute combos if you want to. But for somehow we're the antiquated game.
It is odd the way that works. Well, anyways, that's the question. Thank you guys so much for those submissions. It's always fun to talk about it. Hopefully, we didn't get too doomer with it. You know, I tried not to. End up
you
in
killed
a,
me with that AI.
I try not to end up in a mid-core Yu-Gi-Oh! Rant in the podcast. You know, I'm sometimes good for that. But yeah, thanks for tuning in. It's been fun. Hopefully you're all having a great week. Remember, if you like the podcast, thumbs ups help.
Thumbs up.
Comments help. Shares help. Anything helps. And
remember, we don't have any sponsors, so maybe give that whole membership thing a try.
Yeah, we won't say no if you do. All right. Cool. And for the members, that there might be a bonus episode coming pretty soon, too. All right. We'll see you in the next one.
Pass turn.